Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. With me now, with more observations on last night's debate, especially this particular Pence and Putin part that I found really interesting, because he knows something about Mr. Putin. And with a preview of the New Yorker Festival about to begin is New Yorker editor David Remnick. The 17th annual New Yorker Festival is happening this weekend at theaters and venues around town. Some of the musicians, artists, filmmakers, athletes, and authors who will be interviewed by New Yorker writers include Bruce Springsteen, Sarah Silverman, NBA player Jeremy Lin, the comedian Keegan-Michael Key, Louis C.K., Jonah Hill, the author Zadie Smith. And there are so many more. It's like the best issue of the New Yorker you've ever read come to life. And here with me now to preview the festival and talk about some of the news of the day. And remember David Remnick wrote a book about Russia, and he still follows Russian things and Putin in particular. So we're going to play one more clip from the debate last night and I think have an interesting exchange about it. New Yorker editor and host of WNYC's New Yorker Radio Hour, David Remnick. Hi, David.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. Never mind a little thing like the presidential race. Friday night, you're interviewing Bruce Springsteen at Town Hall. Wow.
Yeah, you got any tips?
No, other than...
Maybe you should have the callers phone in some questions. This thing sold out in 5 seconds. And I'm tempted to say I never realized I was so appealing, but apparently it was Bruce's deal.
Yeah, you got equal billing in the type size, right?
Well, that's because we control the type size for the moment.
All right, listeners, we're going to take David up on that. Do you have a question that you've always wanted to hear somebody ask Bruce Springsteen? And if it's a really, really...
Or Vladimir Putin, by the way.
Really good New Yorker-level question, David Remnick might ask it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and he'll work on landing a Putin interview while he's at it. And as you mentioned, I guess this is sold out, right? So this is not something people can still buy tickets to.
Well, look, there are a lot of events. There are 50 events around town, and there are some terrific things that are not quite sold out. Toby Gevinson talking with Hilton Knowles and Bjork Engels with Ian Parker. I'm talking with Jonah Hill, great actor and now director. Jonathan Safran Foer is appearing. And an event that I think has real appeal for maybe some literarily minded listeners is Anne Goldstein, who's an editor here, is also Elena Ferrante's translator. And suddenly we have this controversy around Elena Ferrante, whether her true identity or true name should have been outed as it was in the press, in the international press the other day. So it's still possible to get into a number of events.
Here's one for Springsteen. Submitted by one of my producers. His heroes, in a sense, are the laid-off factory workers and working-class white voters who are now overwhelmingly for Trump and might not approve of Springsteen's personal progressive politics all that much. You could ask him about that contradiction.
That's a great question, and not only for Bruce Springsteen, but for all of us. You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that the majority of your listeners and probably the majority of readers of The New Yorker are voting not for Donald Trump. That's just a sneaking suspicion. But we need to think about what is the appeal of Donald Trump? Is it his reality television personality? Is it purely the xenophobia and the racism, or is something happening in the country that has been overlooked by what some people are called a kind of neoliberal orthodoxy that also had appeal in the opposition on the left? So it demands real thinking, and not just for Bruce Springsteen, but I think for all of us.
Vicky in Manhattan has a question for you to ask Bruce, or at least one to propose. Hi, Vicky, you're on WNYC.
Oh, good morning. I wanted to ask Bruce Springsteen how extensive his knowledge is of early American folk music, what led him to it, and how much he really knows, because I think he knows most of it, and it's a pretty
obscure. Yeah, it's a great question, and as you probably know as a fan, he did an album and a live album where he put together a kind of neo-folk band and played songs that were hundreds of years old. You know, the same thing that Bob Dylan has done, and they're working off of that American Songbook deeply. But I think it's a great thing to pose to Bruce, and I'll stop answering questions for him right now.
He's got this epic new autobiography called Born to Run. I presume you've read it by now.
I have. I think it's a good book. It's a really good book. And, you know, a lot of rock autobiographies are not autobiographies at all. They're ghosted by somebody. They get interviewed a half a dozen times, and you can sense it. This is a real book, in a way, in the same way that Bob Dylan's Chronicles is a real book, and a very limited number of them that have the what it's got is his voice. It sounds like him. And to me, that's of great value.
Mac in Brooklyn has one. Mac, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
So apparently Bruce Springsteen had a long letter-writing campaign with Walker Percy. The two of them wrote back and forth and discussed a lot about Catholicism. And I just think, you know, in relation to what you were talking about a moment ago, sort of the neoliberal attitude towards the Trump side, I think there is a lot to be learned from listening to people's what stuff you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you probably also have a largely secular audience, and I think hearing about Bruce's relationship with Catholicism as it was told or, I guess, investigated with his letter-writing campaign with Walker Percy could be something interesting.
I think that's a great question. I don't know why
have
I bothered preparing for this. I should just come on the show for an hour, and all my work would be done.
Thank you very much. Oh, here's a ticket buyer. Beth in Princeton is going to be there for your Bruce Springsteen interview at Town Hall. Hi, Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. What my question would be is that Bruce has had very limited formal education, and his family was largely uneducated, blue-collar. But he has such a tremendous depth of knowledge of culture and literature. It comes through in everything that he writes and everything that he talks about. And I'd like to know how he came to that and what his favorite sources of inspiration for culture and literature are, books, films. He's just incredibly knowledgeable, and it's fascinating.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And this isn't the only thing going on at the New Yorker Festival this weekend. It's heavy on people from the world of comedy and TV, it looks like. I mentioned Louis C.K.
It's heavy on politics, and it's heavy on comedy, which may be the same thing this year.
It was funny until it wasn't.
Oh, boy, is it not funny. You know, here's just to tell you how crazy it's gotten. Months ago, I was talking with Evan Osnos, one of our writers in Washington, and I said, you know, I know he's not going to win, or I don't think he's going to win, but why don't you write a piece? Let's think about doing a piece, a heavily reported piece, on what a Trump presidency would be like, almost like a dystopia. And Evan went ahead and started working on it, kind of with the idea in the back of his mind that it was almost a sure shot that this would remain in the realm of dark fantasy. And the week it came out, the piece came out a couple of weeks ago before his catastrophic first debate, and the polls were narrowing and narrowing. I mean, just the illustration, the kind of photo illustration we did of Trump standing in a wintry Oval Office looking out into the Rose Garden, you know, I think there were some cardiac situations among our readers.
Evan Osnos has done such a great job. Ryan Lizza has done such a great job covering the campaign season. Some of Jill Lepore's history articles, and I know I'm leaving out other great New Yorker writers, but the New Yorker has been awesome.
Saunders wrote a particularly good piece about Trump, the novelist and short story writer George Saunders, who exercised his reporting muscles. And Jane Mayer did that great piece about Trump's ghostwriter, who kind of turned on Trump and warned everybody that he could that essentially we'd be electing a sociopath.
Yes, we had Jane on the show with clips from that interview with Tony Schwartz, who really wrote The Art of the Deal.
Yeah.
And his real-life revelations about Trump today, and that George Saunders piece was passed around so much. But to get back to the festival, heavy on comedians, Louis C.K., the Duplass brothers, Sarah Silverman, comedy and TV, Maria Bamford, Keegan-Michael Key from King Peele. Is it because comedy is where a lot of the seriously good social commentary is coming from these days?
I think that's exactly right, Brian, and I think you're seeing it not only on stages where we kind of rarely go, but even more on television where we're, you know, we're glued. A figure like Louis C.K. did something really innovative with that show, Louis, that kind of auteurist, first person, you know, not a writer's room, but it's him. And now on television, as Emily Nussbaum has written for the magazine any number of times, you see imitators of Louis C.K. all over the place. So it'll be interesting to hear from him, one among many.
Here's another proposed Bruce Springsteen question from Michael in the Bronx. See, you started this.
I opened the door.
This wasn't the caller question I had in mind, but yours is better.
Nobody wants to know about Putin, which is fair enough.
This is so much fun. Michael in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, everyone. There's a question some time ago, in the wake of the Amadou Diallo shooting, Mr. Trump came up with a song.
Mr. Springsteen, right?
I mean, Mr. Springsteen. See, you guys saying Trump, you got me saying Trump. Thank you. But Mr. Springsteen came called American Skin, a.k.a. 41 Shots, in replica of the 41 shots fired to Amadou Diallo by the NYPD police. And then, of course, he was blasted and criticized by the police unions and others and law enforcement. Now, given the additional incidents of police shootings, I was wondering if what would Mr. Springsteen say in regards to that, plus if he plans on coming up with another song along those lines.
Well, I do know that, you know, he toured throughout the summer in Europe and in the United States last spring and a bit in the fall, and he sang 41 Shots, American Skin, any number of times. And the resonance, obviously, is not just with Amadou Diallo. It's with so many other incidents that have occurred in the last couple of years that have been captured by cell phone video and have been imprinted on, I hope, all of our minds about the dangers of racism, institutional racism, the distance between the police and the policed, and all these issues that are so on our minds and are at the center of the Black Lives Matter movement and others.
Let me play a clip from the debate last night and get your take. This really struck me for a couple of reasons. This is about a one-minute clip. And if you're just joining us, folks, my guest is the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick, previewing the New Yorker Festival, which will be at various venues around town this weekend, including his own sold-out interview with Bruce Springsteen at Town Hall. But there are tickets available for a lot of other things. But David has written a lot about Russia over the years and follows Putin as a figure, among many other things. So at the debate last night, it came up that, of course, Donald Trump has this sort of bromance with Vladimir Putin, apparently, and Pence was asked to defend it, or more asked, like, how could you, how could he? And here's a one-minute exchange.
When Donald Trump and I observe that, as I've said, in Syria, in Iran, in Ukraine, that the small and bullying leader of Russia has been stronger on the world stage than this administration, that's stating painful facts. That's not an endorsement of Vladimir Putin. That's an indictment of the weak and feckless leadership of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Well, this is one where you can just kind of go to the tape on it. But Governor Pence said, inarguably, Vladimir Putin is a better leader than President Obama.
That is absolutely inaccurate.
And I just think a guy
said
who
he's stronger. He's been stronger on the world stage.
No, you said leader. And I'll just say this, Governor.
You just said better.
If you mistake leadership for dictatorship and you can't tell the difference, a country that's running its economy.
Yeah, here we go. This is the great school thing again. Right. This is
great. If you can't tell the difference, you shouldn't be commander in chief.
David, did you watch last night?
Well, of course I did. And I look, Mike Pence, who I think to a lot of people came off in a kind of calm, grandfatherly way, which was appealing as a contrast to the head of the ticket, who came off the way Alec Baldwin portrayed him on Saturday night, which was unhinged, had its appeal. But on content, What he was doing was defending the indefensible. What he was doing was lying about statements, many statements, not only about Putin, but about a range of issues that we know damn well that Trump not only has said once or twice, but says repeatedly on the campaign trail, whether it's about the character of immigrants, whether it's about, you know the whole litany. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to Putin, he's just not telling the truth. Repeatedly, Donald Trump has shown his misty romance, which is incomprehensible to me, with Vladimir Putin, who has gotten increasingly authoritarian, who has become increasingly aggressive on the world stage. And I don't know what Mr. Pence is suggesting. Is he suggesting that the United States get into a shooting war with Russia? Is he suggesting that we try to find no means of working together with Russia when it's necessary and useful on the world stage? This is the nature of being a president, and it is the nature of diplomacy, not just to work with your friends, but to come to agreements sometimes with countries that are, deeply flawed at best, and aggressively so at worst. Whether it has to do with arms control, whether it has to do with the Iran nuclear deal, which we work with Russia very closely on, even though our relations were deteriorating on other fronts. This was just a fantasy of Mr. Pence last night about Donald Trump's business relations with the Russians, his statements about the Russians, and above all, his understanding of world affairs, which is so dim, so sparse, and yet so lacquered over with tremendous arrogance.
But I'm a little confused, actually, by that answer, because I think I hear you saying that Pence was too belligerent for you last night with respect to Russia, and we should value keeping good diplomatic relations with countries even that we have serious disagreements with and conflicts with.
Look, Brian, during the Cold War, when Russia's behavior was no less aggressive, whether it was in Afghanistan or elsewhere in the world, there was something called détente, and there were arms control agreements staged. Diplomacy is not a pure practice. This is not. Nobody is saying that right. High moralist behavior is the only thing going
right.
on.
And I'm not. But
at the same time, no one has written more aggressively and critically of Putin than I have.
Yes.
And I don't think the Obama administration is under any illusion about the kind of oligarchic structure of Russia or its lack of a free press, or I don't think there's any illusions there.
But
Pence was not suggesting a policy. What he was doing is trying to convince the listener last night that Trump had one attitude when, in fact, he has a different one.
Right. So somebody should ask Trump in the Sunday debate, perhaps, do you agree with your running mate Mike Pence when he said in the debate that Vladimir Putin is a small and bullying leader, right?
Fair enough.
And
I think that's a good question. By the way, I did not think the debate moderator last night did an exceptional job, and nor did I think Kane did as well as he could have, because he was kind of irritatingly interrupting and over-prepared, and that helped mask the really effective content of what he was trying to do, which was to force Mr. Pence to defend what I can only call the indefensible.
You know, on the moderators, so far, nothing against Elaine Quijano or Lester Holt as journalists, but they're not experienced moderators of complex, fast-moving, multifaceted debates. They just don't have a lot of experience in that realm. When we get to this Sunday, it's going to be two of the most experienced, Martha Raddatz from ABC and Anderson Cooper from CNN, and we'll see if they, not to fact-check in a ham-handed way, but to drill down and follow up and make sure.
I have a second question and a third. I agree 100%, Brian. You know, look, the high point of these debates, and I share almost nothing with Megyn Kelly politically, God knows, but when Megyn Kelly started asking very specific pointed questions of Donald Trump many, many months ago, particularly about women, she was completely prepared. Her questions were pointed, and it uncovered something about Trump that had not been as well known as it should have been to the American public, at least not as a political candidate. You know, it's one thing to go on Howard Stern some years ago and mouth off about your wife in the most disgusting terms possible, but this was on a presidential debate stage, and I thought what Megyn Kelly did there, at least in that instance, and again, I don't share anything with her politically, was exemplary because it was specific.
We're out of time, except to ask, where do people go to buy tickets to the New Yorker Festival this weekend?
They go to our website, and they'll get I hate to sound like a politician saying go to my website for our policies, but it's once you get there, you'll find your way to the festival stuff, and you can get to the events that you want to get to. I wish I could tell you there were 10,000 more tickets for Bruce Springsteen, but there's not a one, but there are things to see. Nick Kroll, Tavi Gevinson, Bjork Ingels, a lot of good things.
Are you going to do a Springsteen interview edit on the New Yorker Radio Hour?
We are.
So something to look forward to, among many other things.
And I thank your listeners for all their great questions.
WNYC's New Yorker Radio Hour airs on the weekend, hosted by New Yorker editor David Remnick, who has been my guest. Thanks, David.
All the best, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.